the sixth case, fifth case for argument, the United States versus Victor Young. Martin?
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, in February 2008, the federal criminal justice system was faced with the Herculean task of modifying thousands of sentences based on the two-point reduction in the crack guideline, as the court is well aware. An operative date was March 3rd of 2008, which was when those modifications would take effect. And the federal defender's offices, as well as the United States Attorney's office, as well as the whole judiciary, found ways of cooperation to get through this task, and so various plans were implemented by various district courts as to how to get counsel assigned to defendants and to get the determination before the courts in as expeditious a manner as possible. In the case with regard to Mr. Young, the defendant here, I think that some of the dates are important. That on February 13th of 2008, he filed a request for appointment of counsel with the district court. And then on that date, the district court, on February 13th, the day that he received the request, the judge appointed counsel to represent Mr. Young. In the order appointing counsel, the district court laid out a framework where the defense would review the documents, the pre-sentence report, and the sentencing order, and make a determination as to whether or not the defendant was entitled to relief, and then file a petition. Upon the filing of the petition, the probation department would file an addendum laying out an analysis of whether or not the defendant qualified for the 2 points, as well as putting in public safety factors from the Bureau of Prisons. And then within 10 days after the filing of the addendum, the government was to file a response. In this case, on February 24th, the addendum was filed by the probation department. And on February 28th, myself, counsel for the defendant, filed a petition indicating that the defendant was eligible for 2 points reduction, and that he would be eligible for immediate release on March 3rd of 2008. So from February 13th, 20 days later, from the filing of requesting counsel, this defendant was eligible for reduction and eligible for release. On March 10th of 2008, the government filed a response indicating that it had no objection and that the figures were correct and that the defendant was eligible for release, but had asked that the court order that he not be released for 10 days to give the Bureau of Prisons the ability to make some to do that housekeeping about releasing him. And it was on March 31st of 2008 that we received the order denying the release, recognizing that he qualified for the 2 point reduction, but finding that he was a danger to others or the community, and it is that finding and it is that procedure that we object to and ask the court to remand this case for further hearing on whether or not the defendant is in fact a danger to another person or the community. The court relied upon the addendum to the pre-sentence report, which the court had requested. And in that addendum, which was, again, filed on February 24th of 2008, in that addendum, it did outline that this particular person, Mr. Young, had some write-ups in the Bureau of Prisons. And as the court correctly counted, there were 17 listed. Many of those were for various things like being insolent to staff, refusing to obey orders, phone problems. But two of them, on February 8th of 2006, was fighting with another person, and on March 20th of 2003 was assault without serious injury. And I think that those are the two that would bring focus to say, well, is this person, could he be a danger to another person or the community if he were released early? But in that program that the court had laid out, which was a program that I thought was very effective to get the cases forward quickly, because and I know that the courts, the government, the courts, and the defense were all very concerned that no one spend one day in jail that they didn't have to spend, and March 3rd being operative, that's why things were done as quickly as they were. In that addendum outlining those 17 issues, again, the two that really stick out would be the fighting and the assault. The others, general disobedience, but taken by themselves, probably not necessarily indicative of dangerousness. But the reason why I point out to the court the time frame is because, well, there were thousands of cases across the nation. There were thousands of cases, I think, in this circuit. There were hundreds in our district. I think I personally handled probably 70 to 100 of these cases, and probably half of them were for immediate release. So between February and March, we had a lot of cases to handle. Numerous cases came back with infractions and violations listed in their Bureau of Prison record in the addendums. Only as far as I was representing, I think that this was the only case that the court said that the person would not get the relief because they were a danger, citing that caveat. And I don't know of any, actually across the district, I'm not sure. Well, I don't know of any. There could be.
Did you file anything taking exception to the facts as stated in this addendum?
I think that's a very valid question, and that's what the government has raised in its response. And I think that the problem with that standard is the fact that so many of the individuals had listings of problems in the Bureau of Prisons, and to file with regard to all of the cases that you potentially would have seen that the court could have looked at that as a reason to not give relief, to do that would have taken a lot of investigation and a lot of time in this short time frame.
Can I cut to the chase here? The fact is that you didn't file anything in response, and you did not request a hearing, right?
Yes. No. Okay. There was nothing filed in response.
Okay. And what you're asking for here, as I understand your argument, is a rule that if a court is inclined to deny this relief under the crack cocaine amendment, that we ought to require the court to sua sponte hold a hearing to give an opportunity to counsel to react to that and respond and rebut it. Is that the rule that you're asking for?
Yes.
And is that consistent with a recent decision in the Tidwell case? I'm sorry, that's not a recent decision. That's an old case, but it has to do with the procedure and the discretion of the district court on these sentence modification motions.
In the sentence modification motion, the language is that the court shall modify the guideline determination by 2 points.
But it doesn't mandate a sentence reduction. That's still a discretionary determination, and the procedure that the court employs is also discretionary. Isn't that right?
Well, if that were to be the case, Your Honor, then the court could basically just deny in every case. And there would be no recourse if it's completely discretionary to the court. I don't think it is completely discretionary to the court.
What do you base that on?
I think that at the time when Mr. Young was sentenced, the guidelines were mandatory, and if we hold that standard forth, the court shall reduce the guideline by two levels, means that the court must then reduce the sentence by the two levels.
So your argument is that every defendant is entitled to a sentence reduction, that it's not discretionary?
I would say that it is, to that effect, it is not discretionary unless the court finds that the person is a danger to the community or another person.
Well, which is what the court did here.
And in making that separate finding, there was no process available to the defense. The government filed a pleading, and the government's pleading indicated that it agreed that the defendant should have the reduction. When we received the order on March 31st, that is really the first, that's the only indication we had that the court wasn't going to give the reduction.
Well, the court is not the proverbial potted plant in this sort of a proceeding, rubber stamping what the parties agreed to. The judge exercises independent discretion and is entitled to do so under the statute and the amendment.
But under the circumstance where the court is finding that a person is a danger to the community or to another person, at that point that the court wants is going to make that finding, the addendum to the defense and the government should have the ability to at least present to the court why that's not the case.
Well, you had that opportunity. There was nothing preventing you from doing it. Other than the exigencies that you spent most of your argument describing.
Except for the fact that the court had not provided any ability to do that. The court would be inviting us to, in every case, try and refute those allegations, and to do it in a manner that was so quickly put together so that on March 3rd of 2008, there would be the risk that if you investigated that first, you wouldn't be getting relief.
Right. That's why I asked the question that I did. The rule that you're essentially asking for is a rule to this effect. If the court is inclined to deny relief under the amendment, it must hold a hearing. That's the rule you're asking for here. And
yes.
Would we just lay that down as part of what? Our superintending authority over the district courts, or is there some basis in the law for that sort of a requirement?
There should be a record for review as to that decision that the court has made.
Mr. Warren, you filed your petition at the end of February?
The end of February.
So I guess it's fair to say that district court is in a position to start reviewing the addendum as soon as he or she receives it, right?
That's correct.
And shouldn't you presume that that's what the district court is doing?
Yes.
So if you choose not to voice any comment about the contents of the addendum, why should the district court not proceed independently to make the assessment that he or she has to make?
Because the addendum is...
I can understand if the petition was filed on the 28th and, you know, first couple days of March, looked like you didn't get much of a chance, although you had the addendum at the time of the filing. But when the court is possessed for a month before its ruling of the addendum, it seems to be a difficult rule to suggest the judge could not be about reaching a conclusion as to the appropriateness of the reduction.
Well, with regard to the right to be heard and the right to have a record with regard to that.
You have a right to ask to be heard, right? I mean, you're not requiring a hearing in it. You wouldn't ask us to say there has to be a hearing in every one of these, would you?
No, there would not necessarily have to be a hearing.
But you could request it. I mean, if you got a troublesome addendum as far as the contents, which puts at risk the potential not to get the reduction, it does seem that the ball would be in the court of the defendant to make sure that that judge doesn't proceed to an independent judgment, apart from the petition, of course, without bringing to the court's attention some countervailing considerations.
it is a blind sight to the defense to receive the order that the government had agreed to.
It's a triangle, right? Here's a third. As my sister, judge, has said, the judge isn't a potted, district judge is not a potted plant, certainly not in sentencing.
The procedure that the court had laid out did not give the defense that opportunity. So anything that would have been filed would have been extra out of the procedure that the court had requested the parties follow explicitly in its order.
Perhaps you should track that for me. I'm not sure.
The court explicitly indicated that the defense should file its petition first.
Right.
Then the addendum should be filed with after the defense files its petition, and then the government had 10 days to respond after the addendum. That's what the court specifically instructed in the appointment of counsel. That was what was explicitly instructed of the parties.
But in this case, the addendum was in the hands of everyone in advance of the petition being filed, right?
The addendum came out 4 days before the petition, and the probation department did a wonderful job of getting the information together.
I understand.
There was no provision for objections to the addendum.
There was absolutely no provision for objection to the addendum. The addendum was filed with the court without review of counsel from the government or from the defense.
If you're asking for a hearing, you have to indicate what you could show if you had a hearing. Isn't that appropriate?
That would be appropriate, and that's the opportunity we would like to have. Thank you.
Ms. Berkowitz.
May it please the Court, Diane Berkowitz of the United States. If I can address for the Court the issue that was just discussed right now, that there was no provision for objections within the order. I'd note to the Court there was nothing in the order that prevented counsel from asking for an extension of time.
Well, that may be true, but wouldn't it be the natural course if you're setting out a procedure that if you're saying, all right, you file the addendum, and wouldn't the natural follow-up to that be to provide that the other side could file any objections they had?
Certainly, Your Honor, that is something that could have been done, but there is, again, nothing in that order that prohibits the defendant from...
Well, I don't think there's any rule that requires it at the moment, but we're presented with this case where everybody's saying, well, we didn't have an opportunity to do this because of that and so forth. And even if we had been able to object it, apparently there was such a flood of these things, we don't know if we could have objected very intelligently. So it's a sort of a complicated problem.
When the petition was filed, Ms. Berkowitz, how soon thereafter did the government announce its position of no objection?
I believe we filed it after we received the revised pre-sentence report shortly thereafter. The position that the government takes, as the court has pointed out, we're just one part of that triangle. And the judge does not have to follow the position of the United States Attorney's Office with respect to deciding whether or not he's going to reduce the sentence of a defendant in these crack guideline cases. 3582C2 makes it very clear that the judge, and this court's opinion in Tidwell, makes it very clear that the district court judge has great latitude in how he handles a 3582C2 petition. In this case, the court relied on the information contained in the revised pre-sentence report, to which there was no additional information provided by defense counsel, although he did receive that revised pre-sentence report before he filed his motion for the downward adjustment. The court found that 17 violations, and there were 17 violations, was indicative of an individual who could not follow the rules and would not be safe in society, would pose a danger to the community. And for that reason, consistent with the statute 3553, the district court found that it did not agree that the defendant should be released early, that he should be given the benefit of the downward adjustment in the crack guidelines. Defense counsel did have ample opportunity to challenge the information contained in the PSR. He could have asked for an extension of time. These things were not done. And the court has great latitude in how it handles a 3582 petition. It does not have to hold a hearing. It doesn't even have to appoint a lawyer, although it did in this case, and more for the purpose of facilitating the filing of these motions. But given that there was a lawyer on board, there was nothing contained within the petition that would ask the court to consider any reason why those 17 violations should not impact on the court's decision whether or not to downward adjust the defendant's sentence. If the court has no further questions, the government would rely on its brief and ask this court to affirm the order of the district court. Thank you.
Mr. Martin, I know your time has expired, but you may have a minute, and I have a question for you anyway. So you actually have 2 minutes since I have a question. So if you can go first, and then I'll.
All right. The procedure that was laid out had absolutely no, after the filing of the petition, had nothing in it to allow the defense to factually challenge.
Let's just talk about the procedure. When you say the procedure that was laid out, what procedure are we talking about? Was there a minute order or coming from the district court or was the Northern District? Did it have some local rule? How was this handled?
The defendants would file a pro se motion,
right,
either asking for relief or asking for counsel. Then this particular court, this district court,
Judge Moody,
laid out a very nice system for working through the case. And the system was that the defense counsel would review the judgment order and the original pre-sentence report and make a determination as to whether or not, number one, they could represent the defendant, and then if the defendant was qualified for the 2 points, file a petition. And then it was after that petition was filed, the directive was to file the pre-sentence, the addendum to the pre-sentence report.
Well,
in this case, it was filed before.
Well, that's just like having the record, so the judge could make a, I mean, to have it. But in this case, the record is, as such, the addendum is in the hands of everyone before the petition is filed.
Yes, it is.
It seems to me what occurred here is, after appointment of counsel, that frankly, great reliance was placed on the fact that the government, for whatever reason, maybe it didn't focus as much on the addendum as it might have, but I'm not here to suggest it should have done otherwise, but and then you said, well, my God, we don't have any objection from the government. There's no need to go further. Is that what occurred here? Was there great reliance in somehow, are you suggesting, on because of the government's position that there was no obligation to worry about the risk attendant, the judge still making an independent call on this?
Yes, Your Honor. There was, because many people's addendums were coming back with problems. I'm not saying they were as many as Mr. Young, some probably more severe than Mr. Young, but many were coming back with these problems. But it hadn't really been an issue, and the government agreed to the reduction, and basically that was as far as litigation went.
I don't know how many came to the Northern District, but. And I don't want you to go outside the record, but you're obviously a professional in the district and are competent to practice there. Is it just that these cases were just routinely getting the reduction from the various judges in the Northern District, and so there was no need to focus on a particular addendum in one case as opposed to another?
Thankfully, that was the case.
Well, that's what I suspected occurred here.
Yes.
But the very fact that seemed to be the natural flow, we now have a district judge who, for whatever reason, and gives his reason, makes this call. It's very hard for us to it seems to me, to create this new rule. I don't know how many cases are in the pipeline that have been addressed or yet to be addressed. That is going to shift the burden to the district court and somehow not to act. when it's received pleadings from both sides in the case. Now, this case, as I say, causes some unease for me because, as I say, the government is up here telling us that the 17 violations that contained in the addendum give basis for the judge to do this, yet they were not troubled and decided to go along with the reduction, which I can see at least set in motion. Perhaps in your mind, there's no need to do more, especially if you're a busy defense lawyer handling other cases. But it's a little difficult for us to fault, it seems to me, a district judge who attended to this case in this manner.
If I may, just a concluding note, in the reduction, in the charge that if a person is a danger to the community, to another individual, I took that in my own mind until this ruling to be a much more forceful danger. And I think the meaning, I mean, there are some witnesses, there are some defendants who are actual danger to witnesses professed at trial or brought out in pre-sentences and things like that.
Well,
Mr. Young was not one of those, and I know it's not limited. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Yeah, that's the obvious case. We're talking about a case where poor institutional adjustment amounts to a risk to the community. And that's something that ought to be anticipated in every case where there is poor institutional adjustment by this kind of track record of tickets in prison.
And some of them apparently involved assault and fighting as opposed to some of the more minor violations that might attend incarceration.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Mr. Martin, and I appreciate your views and your representation. Thank you, Ms. Berkowitz. And the case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.